Good morning. I will call the meeting to order. We're at 9 a.m. We have the August 14th, 2025 meeting of the Planning Commission. Everyone, let's have a roll call, please.
Yes, good morning. Commissioner Viacana?
Here.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Here.
Commissioner Avila?
Here.
And Chair Shaw?
Here. Okay, let's have the flag salute, please. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, I will open it up now for public comment. This is for comment on items that are not already listed on the agenda. Do we have any speaker slips?
No request to speak.
Okay, no request to speak. I see no one coming up, so we will close public comment. And we will move into planning staff updates, please.
All right, good morning, Chair Shaw, Commissioners, Eric Hughes, Division Manager of the current Planning Division, here to provide you with recent board updates and a preview of your upcoming schedule. So the last board meeting was on August 5th, and there actually are no updates. We didn't have any items. So we'll move on to your upcoming schedule. The next two regularly scheduled Planning Commission meetings, which are on August 28th and September 11th, are canceled. So the next meeting, we're having a special meeting on September 16th. On that day is a hearing to consider a request by NKT Development LLC to amend the Dan Reserve Specific Plan, Conditional Use Permit, and Investing Tentative Tract Map, Track 3159, Project Number LRP 2025-0004, also amend 2025-00003. The project includes, it's a reduction in the residential unit count from 1,370 units to 1,242 units. The also removing the requirement to construct 100 accessory dwelling units and increase the total open space from 55.6 acres to approximately 60.86 acres. The project is located within the Dana Reserve Specific Plan area, west of US 101 and east of Hetrick Avenue within the Napomo community of Napomo. Then the next regularly scheduled meeting is September 25th. The first item is a request by the County of San Luis Obispo to amend the general plan safety element to update implementation programs and strategies for development in very high fire hazard severity zones as required by Senate Bill 1241. Also include reference to the local hazard mitigation plan for disaster recovery funding eligibility per Assembly Bill 2140. And lastly, to establish an implementation strategy regarding the exception process for dead-end roads. The next item is a hearing to consider a request by Verizon Wireless to construct a new unmanned wireless facility disguised as a faux water tower. The project is located in the coastal zone in the community of Los Osos at 1155 Los Olivos Avenue. And then lastly, which we'll hear today, there is a cell a request by Cornelius Whitehead for a development plan coastal development permit, CDRC 2024-00027. That item is scheduled for today. However, the applicant has requested a continuance to a date certain, and that date would be September 25th. So should that be approved, that item would also be heard on that day. That concludes staff's updates, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. And do any of the commissioners have updates? Okay, no updates. We'll move into our consent agenda. Let's see. So just meeting minutes on here. Is there any discussion or anything anyone wants to pull? Okay. Then I will open it up for public comment just on the consent agenda. I see no one coming forward, so I'm going to close public comment on consent. And then if anyone would like to make a motion.
So moved. I'd move we approve the consent.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Let's have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yep.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, next up, we have a hearing to consider a request by Cornelius Whitehead, and this is for a continuance. So I will hand it off to staff to introduce it further.
Yeah, good morning, Eric Hughes, County Planning and Building. This morning, we have Dominic Del Porto. He's the project manager who will speak to the item.
Good morning, Commissioners. Dominic Del Porto, Slo County Planning and Building, and project manager for this cell tower going outside of Cambria. Unfortunately, some of the reports required for this project that was previously continued from the May 8th hearing of this year have not yet been submitted, but they will be submitted we're expecting the next couple of days or weeks, and we'll be able to take the item in September, on September 25th, as Eric said earlier. Available for questions. Thank you.
Okay, does anyone have questions on this? I had one question. I know we hear a lot with these cell towers that there are certain timelines that can kick in. Does this inhibit that in any way, or does that timeline start kicking in?
So typically, when the applicant is requesting a continuance, the timeline will be told pending the action.
Okay, thank you. Okay, I see no other questions. I will open it up for public comment on the continuance. Seeing no one come forward, I will close public comment. And I will take discussion or a motion.
I'll move to approve the continuance.
To date certain.
To date certain.
25
September. September 25th. Yep.
A second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. If we could have a roll call, please.
Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, thank you. So we'll move into our first hearing item. This is a hearing to consider an amendment to the general plan, conservation and open space element, to improve public access to open space for consistency with SB 1425. If we can have staff introduce.
Yes, Madam Chair. Eric Hughes, Planning and Building. Presenting this item, we have Kip Morris, and in support, we have Holly Phipps.
Thank you. My name is Kip Morris with Planning Staff. Good morning. And the item before you is a focused amendment to the conservation and open space element for consistency with Senate Bill 1425. The state of California adopted Senate Bill 1714-25 on September 30th, 2022. And the bill requires all cities and counties within the state of California to update their open space elements to address three things: access to open space, climate resilience, and rewilding opportunities. And the requirement is that the open space element is updated by January 1st, 2026. So the county's current conservation and open space element was adopted on May 11th, 2010. The element partially meets the requirements of SB 1425 because it does contain specific goals and policies addressing climate change and rewilding opportunities. However, the element does not currently address equitable access to open space. And so this focused update before you today is to address this requirement. So the SB 1425 requirements that are currently met by the open space element are shown in this table here. And the bill's requirements focus on climate resilience and co-benefits of open space and rewilding opportunities, including preserving and enhancing a network of open space. And the existing goals and policies that are relevant that meet those are shown in the column at right. The proposed amendments consist of one new policy and two new implementation strategies. The purpose of the recommended policy and implementation strategies is to improve access to open space that considers social, economic, and racial equity. So policy OS 2.11 would require consideration of social, economic, and racial equity when improving public open space for San Luis Obispo County residents. And that language directly mirrors the language from the bill. Then there are two recommended implementation strategies for this policy. So the first one, 2.11.1, recommends the county coordinate with local, state, and federal agencies to provide free or reduced fee passes to day use public open spaces, including recreational areas for residents. The second strategy, OS2112, seeks to improve equitable access to open spaces by amending the land use ordinances to require, as part of private development, creation of public open spaces, and require those open spaces to provide access that may include, but are not limited to, ADA compliant gates at trailheads, designated disabled parking, gender neutral restrooms, and multilingual signs. So this strategy focuses more on the creation of new public open spaces as part of private development and ensuring that when those open spaces are created that they provide equitable access. So therefore, it is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission recommend the Board of Supervisors amend the conservation and open space element to improve public access to open space for all residents as required by SB 1425. This concludes staff's presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Do we have questions? Oh, yes, we have a question.
So the recommendation is a combination of both OS 1 and 2, or one or the other?
The recommended policies is just the one policy and then the two implementation strategies.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. I guess my question is that this is going to be put on private development, so it's more of a cost thing. So what are we talking about? Well, how much are we adding to already expensive fees and development costs? I mean, we sit here and fight to try to get low-income housing and housing, and it seems like adding more regulation is not something we want to do. So what exactly are we adding by recommending this?
So you're not, because the nature of the general plan and especially the conservation open space element, it's really a visionary guiding document. So we're not looking at adding a specific fee. This would allow us to update the land use ordinances. And so any fees that were examined would need to go through the review process as part of that update.
So it wouldn't add fees though, but it would add additional things that a developer would have to do when they basically build.
Essentially, yes. And what that would look like could depend on the size of the development proposed. And that would all need to go for review by this commission and then also to the Board of Supervisors, any update to those elements or any update to those ordinances.
Okay. What's that? It is a cost.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but it is a cost of time.
Yeah. And then I guess question for council is, what if we don't have this updated by the deadline in 2026?
That's a good question. I'm not sure what the penalties would be if we failed to do it. But I think if we're on track to do it, if we approve this today.
Okay. So sounds like you have a choice, but maybe just one. I had one question because this is something dealing with kind of private open space, but also public open space. Like, could you give an example then of where these fees would be reduced for local people? I found that interesting, but I don't know where that would be.
Yeah, so I think you might be referring to the first implementation strategy about reduced fees for public day use areas. Yes. And so actually it's interesting. So we actually do have some counties or some programs within the county that the Parks Department implements that do offer reduced fees for day use areas through the library. It's just not codified in our general plan element. And so what that would do if we put this in the general plan element is it serves as a reference point and a guiding document for future programs. And when the county goes to review programs such as reducing fees or providing free day use areas, we can point back to consistency with this general plan element. So it's more about the future creation and maintenance of existing or new programs like that. And there, I think some of them are administered through the county public library at the moment. Okay. Is my understanding. So that you can go and obtain free passes to certain areas through the public library system.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. Thank you. I didn't know that. Are there any other questions?
Well, I had that same one, kind of wondering how that works, but it sounds like that's sort of already in action. So this would just be guiding that. So yeah, comfortable with that. Thank you.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Just kind of building on some of the conversation that's gone back and forth so far, and thank you for the presentation. Walk us through a scenario with private land. Someone comes forward with a specific plan requirement or a plan that, like, we're going to hear about in September, just as an example, and there's some parkland in the proposed specific plan. Can you just give me a walkthrough, high level, over what that looks like with this policy?
Yeah, and of course, this would be hypothetically, but say someone comes with a specific plan and there's a requirement for a park to be included as part of that. It would need to be open to the public, so not just to residents of the specific plan area. And also, it would need to include equitable access. And the language in the proposed implementation measures is, it gives examples, so it doesn't have requirements for specific ones, but for example, like if they were putting gates, like turnstiles at the trailheads, you would need to make sure that those were ADA compliant, and also like parking ADA compliant. And then signage, we need to consider multilingual signage rather than just signage in English, things like that. And so when the specific plan goes forward and they are, they need to make findings for consistency with the general plan, these are some of the things that they would look to be consistent with.
Okay, and I don't mean to get in the weeds, but going back to the example that I pitched to you, and I'm not holding you to this answer, but the park is maintained by HOA fees within the development. Is it still considered open to the public with this requirement?
I believe that would depend on how we word the ordinance update. But that is one potential.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I guess I have a comment after listening to Ben, but it's kind of going along with what Alex is saying, is there might not be a fee applied by the county, but to build, if someone has built a few parks, the turnstiles, the signage, the ADA improvements, all that is going to be, it could be potentially a large cost. So as we're trying to whittle down to, you know, get things cheaper for homes, for low-income housing, we're going to add this back in, which is, it could potentially be a big cost, is I think what you're getting at. Hidden fee.
Yeah, could you put the two implementations back up on the screen just so we could kind of look at that as we think about that? So we're saying ADA compliant gates, designated parking, gender neutral restrooms, and multilingual signs. I had a question kind of following up on Commissioner Lieberman's question. So I'm thinking of an example. There's a gated community near my home that has a park inside. Now, does that mean that, like, other kids from the neighborhood are allowed to go in that community to have access to that park? That's always a question.
Yeah, Ben Dorth, County Council. So just going back to the question you asked about penalties, and I can't see anything in there that has penalties for not complying with this. There are penalties for failing to adopt like the housing element, certain provisions of that, but I don't see that there are any penalties for failing to adopt this in a timely manner. I would not recommend that we go that route and find out otherwise, but as far as I can tell, that there are no penalties for that. In terms of access, I would see this as forward-looking. So existing parks that have not been identified as open to the public wouldn't necessarily be subject to these provisions. It would be more forward-looking thing where the developer is made aware that that is going to be a requirement of the development.
Interesting.
But I think this is very mm-hmm. high level at this point. So as Kip, Mr. Morris stated, you know, there there need to be some more development of the actual policies and ordinance implementation in terms of how that would actually work.
Okay. Do we have other questions or comments before I open it to the public?
Just one more. So just stepping away from this, this is a state requirement that we don't like. Is that a correct assumption?
I'll answer the first part of that question. This is a state requirement. I am not going to opine on whether or not we like it. But, yeah, so this is something that we're required to implement by the state. It's part of the government code that requires us to update the open space element and incorporate these policies within it.
I appreciate your professional response. Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? Go ahead. Well,
just kind of back to the, as we're trying to get lower income housing and ultra low income housing, there's potential costs. Some of these just handrails at a park could cost in the neighborhood of $200,000-$300,000. You know, added on as not a fee, but a cost to the developer that's gonna have to be spread across the low income housing that we're trying to create.
Could we just get through closed public comment or open and close public comment before we get into discussion?
Yeah. Okay. If I think we're out of questions, so I will open public comment. Okay, I see no one coming forward on this. So I'm gonna close public comment and now we'll take it back to discussion.
Okay, so I'd like to just share a few experiences hearing what I am. I appreciate these kind of questions and thoughts because it will add money. But as an affordable housing developer, developing affordable housing right now and going through this process of planning and costing accessibility features at a public park as a part of the project, it adds value. We want our park to be accessible. You're absolutely right. It adds cost, but there's much to be said for making these facilities available to everyone, whether that's in a fashion of ADA compliant, whether that's in a fashion of welcoming to communities that typically don't feel welcomed. So yes, it is a cost, you're absolutely right, but it's one we wanna bear, and I think we should bear, and that's the reasoning for this coming before us. When we're going backwards or looking at things already there, I think it's a trickier one. So I appreciate council pointing out, or staff, this wouldn't go looking to try to change what's already existing. And I've had several experiences outside of California. One particular experience when I lived in Detroit and cycled out of the city to a suburb on a hot, 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 muggy summer day and found that none of the access to the water, their Detroit River becomes Lake St. Clair, was accessible to the public. You had to be a homeowner. So as a Detroit resident cycling through the suburbs on a hot summer day, there was no access to the water features for literally tens of miles. And it was really striking. I was literally locked out on a hot day of a swim anywhere for a long ways. And as a cyclist there, that wasn't an easy kind of ride tens of miles away to access some water. So we do see, if we haven't built in accessibility features, we do see exclusionary actions and the public being locked out for long distances. So I hope everybody will consider that and recognize that some of the costs are worth it. We're not specifying a lot of things here. Our examples are ADA parking, which probably is already required in other codes too, but can't hurt, access through the fence. Yeah, agreed, probably costs a fair bit more. Signage, if you're making new signage to add in some other languages and welcoming features, doesn't necessarily have to cost a lot more. Thanks, I'll be voting for this.
Okay, are there any more discussion? Or a motion, whatever?
Just some discussion. I feel, PTSD from a former life as an elected official, but a state mandate that we really need to take affirmative action on with one hand tied behind my back. I balance that with the housing needs assessments and the density bonuses and reduction in parking. And so, you know, living in Grover Beach, where we have some four-story mixed-use buildings going up that I think are fabulous, but people that live there are talking about nowhere to park, where are these cars going to park? So we have all these issues with these well-intended policies. And this one, looking forward, if I'm buying into a community with a homeowners association that's maintaining a park, yet this legislation requires it to be open to the public, I just see conflict. So I will be supporting the staff recommendation with trepidation. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any more microphones on. I think it's been a great discussion. Is anybody ready to make a motion? And we can just see where it goes.
Sure. If staff will put up the recommended action for approval here, I'll make the motion. Move that we recommend that the Board of Supervisors amend the General Plan Conservation and Open Space Element, the COAS, to improve public access to open space for all residents as required by SB 1425.
Okay, is there a second? Everyone's very excited. I'll make a second. Okay, sorry, that was me now. Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any discussion before we vote or just ready to vote? Okay, could we do a roll call, please?
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yeah.
Commissioner Shaw?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Viacana?
No.
Commissioner Avila?
No.
Okay, sorry, I didn't realize we did five. Okay, motion passes. I thought we were waiting for one more. Okay, blacked out on Lieberman. Okay, good. Motion passes. I appreciate the discussion. I think it was, you know, really thoroughly addressed and points were brought up that I hope will be addressed down the road. We also got the lawyers involved, which is always a bonus. All right, so next up, we have the hearing to consider a request by HR Holdings LLC for a vesting tentative tract map to subdivide an existing 2.17-acre parcel into 8 residential parcels. And I will let staff get situated while we get this introduced.
Yes, thank you. Eric Hughes, current planning and building. I'm going to speak slowly to give them time. presenting today, we have project manager Lane Sutherland. And in support, we have supervising planner Cheryl Koo. And I'll give them a few more seconds to get ready here. Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Lane Sutherland, and I'm the project planner for the proposed tract map. The item before you today is a request by HR Holdings LLC for a vesting tentative tract map 2879. The applicant is requesting to subdivide a 2.17-acre parcel into 8 residential lots and 1 private road lot, with associated improvements including site grading, a new cul-de-sac road, utility extensions, and off-site drainage easement improvements. The site is located along Gateway Drive in the community of Heritage Ranch, just south of the gatehouse entry. The project site is currently undeveloped, contains non-native grasses and several oak trees, and has moderate slopes. The project will be served by the Heritage Ranch Community Services District. The project includes 2 requests for deviation from standard improvement requirements. First, an adjustment to reduce the right-of-way width from 50 feet to 47 feet. Second, a waiver of the requirement to install curb, gutter, and sidewalks. Staff supports both requests due to the project's setting and the surrounding neighborhood, which lacks these improvements. This map shows the location of the project site in the broader Heritage Ranch community. It is located immediately adjacent to the gatehouse on Gateway Drive and near Nacimiento Lake Drive. The property is designated residential single family and is located within the Heritage Ranch Village Reserve area. No land use or zoning amendments are required, and the project is consistent with applicable land use policies. This aerial view shows the project site surrounded by existing single family homes to the south and west and undeveloped land to the north and east. The project site currently supports non-native grasses and scattered oak trees. This slide shows the proposed tract map layout, which includes 8 residential parcels ranging from 8,385 square feet to 13,647 square feet in size, and 1 private road lot that will provide access to all new parcels. As shown here, Road A will connect directly to Gateway Drive. The landscaping plan includes trees and vegetation along the road and entry area to screen the subdivision from the main entry to Heritage Ranch. This design supports a rural aesthetic with native drought-tolerant plant selections, which helps integrate the project into the surrounding community character. Improvements along Gateway Drive include widening and a left turn pocket. A condition of approval requires that these plans be reviewed by the Heritage Ranch Owners Association prior to county approval to ensure consistency with neighborhood standards. An off-site drainage easement is proposed on the adjacent property to the east. The applicant has secured a signed easement agreement with the Levy Family Trust. This easement is necessary to comply with the county stormwater management requirements. All future development of residential units will be subject to the residential single-family development standards, including height measurements, setbacks, and parking requirements. A separate building permit will be required for development of each lot. A mitigated negative declaration was prepared and circulated for public review between May 20th and June 18th, 2025. Potentially significant impacts to biological resources, air quality, hazards and hazardous materials, and land use and planning were identified. All impacts were mitigated to levels less than significant through adoption of mitigation measures. The project was referred to several county departments, the Heritage Ranch Community Services District, the Heritage Ranch Homeowners Association, and the Air Pollution Control District. All comments were addressed through previous project revisions or conditions of approval. Staff has prepared findings for approval, including findings for the adjustment and waiver requests. The project conforms to the Subdivision Map Act and county land use ordinances, is consistent with applicable planning policies, and does not result in significant environmental impacts with implementation of the mitigation measures. Staff recommends that the Planning Commission adopt the mitigated negative declaration and approve sub 2020-00024/tract 2879 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and the conditions listed in Exhibit B. That concludes staff's presentation. Planning staff is available to answer any questions. The applicant's agent, Ian McCarville with Kurt Consulting, has also prepared a short presentation for you and is available to answer any questions.
Okay, do we want to have any brief questions before we hear from the applicant? No? Okay. All right, yes, let's hear from the applicant then, please.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson Shaw and Commissioners. My name's Ian McCarville. I'm a land use consultant at Kirk Consulting. Today I am here on behalf of HR Holdings LLC. One of the owners, Dan Lloyd, is also joining me here today, and I'll be preparing or sharing a brief presentation on the proposed project. As always, Lane did a very thorough job, so I'm going to keep this high level and then be available for questions. So as Lane pointed out, the project is proposing to subdivide a 2.17-acre parcel into 8 residential lots and 1 private street lot. The site is zoned residential single family and has been designed to be consistent with other subdivisions in the area. Here we have an aerial site plan. As you can see, each lot includes a defined building envelope, and we'll take an access from a new cul-de-sac from Gateway Drive. Those building envelopes range from about 4,100 to 6,300 square feet. As a part of the project, Gateway Drive will be widened and restriped to accommodate that left-hand turn lane and an outbound travel lane. And in response to comments from the HOA, a gate will be installed near the subdivision entrance. Within the subdivision, we have 2 access easements, one over lot 3 and 4 for the benefit of lot 2, and another over lot 5 for the benefit of lot 6. These easements are shown as pink on this slide. Also shown is the off-site drainage easement located to the north on the neighboring property. Also, as Lane noted, we do have that signed easement ready to be recorded upon approval of this project. And lastly, we have a sewer easement proposed over lots 4 and 5, ultimately connecting to the existing sewer line to the south, as shown in blue. The project does meet the minimum parcel size standards for the residential single-family land use category. Based on the applicable tests, the minimum parcel size is 6,000 square feet, and the smallest parcel we are proposing is about 8,300 square feet. We've also confirmed that biological and cultural resources impacts will be mitigated to less than significant. We've also received a conditional will serve letter from the Heritage Ranch for both water and sewer services. As a part of our biological resources assessment, we did do an oak tree analysis. So shown here, we do have two oak trees proposed for removal. That's 44 and 43. Oak tree 42 was dead, and we did not need to request removal for it. And then over in the offsite easement area, we have five oak trees that will be impacted. So ultimately, using the standard county mitigation ratio, we'll be replanting 18 oak trees within the proposed landscape plan. So in conclusion, the project has been designed to be in compliance with the residential single-family land use standards and the Heritage Ranch Village standards, and is consistent with the development, consistent with other developments in the community, and will not result in significant impacts. Therefore, I respectfully request that your commission adopt the staff recommendation and approve the project. Thank you, and I'm available for any questions.
Does anyone have questions?
I have one. Did I understand you to say that there will be a gate delineating this new cul-de-sac?
There will be, yeah.
So there will be a gate within the main Heritage Ranch gate?
Yep.
So no, gate.
It's outside the gate.
Oh, sorry, yeah.
Oh, this is just outside the main gate?
Yeah, just outside the gate.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand that proximity to that then. So it'll be a whole separate entry then, the main gate to the ranch. So if I were going to walk out of there off of this cul-de-sac to try to get somewhere, I'd have to get out through the gate at this street, and then I'd have to go in through the gate into Heritage Ranch?
Well, I don't believe the, I guess in theory, yes. There would be two gates, but it's walkable.
Mm-hmm. Right, proximity-wise, it's
yeah.
Contiguous there, I see. Okay, got it, thanks.
And the gate will be set back 50 feet. We'll be complying with public works conditions there. And again, this is coming from the HROA.
Okay, any other questions? I had one just about the reduction in sight line from 50 to 47. I see the curb gutter sidewalk waiver is very compliant with the neighborhood, but is this reduction in sight line pretty compliant too?
Yeah, so they kind of go hand in hand. So because we're reducing the curb gutter sidewalk, then we can reduce the right of way. So the actual travel lane is still compliant. And then we're just reducing the overall right of way due to the removal of the curb gutter sidewalk.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Are there other public comment? Okay, seeing none, I'm gonna close public comment, and then I will take deliberations.
Okay, I'll start with something here. So just as some commissioners showed some conflict on the last vote, I have some conflicts on this one, because what we're doing is creating another cul-de-sac that doesn't connect up and effectively requires kind of passage through two gates to get anywhere without sidewalks or curbs. I get that this is adjacent to other development and in a residential zone. So I'll be supporting this, but with some level of conflict that we're creating. Basically, I'm not that walkable community, not that well connected out in I take it this is a high fire severity zone. Was some of this area burned in 2016?
We're pulling up the fire zone layer right now. But yes, I do understand there's been fires in the vicinity, in the region, in the past.
Okay. Well, while they pull that up, do we have other comments on there?
Where's the horse trail? Because I read something about the horse path.
It's a high fire hazard zone.
Thanks.
Any other comments while we're kind of looking for the horse trail? Okay. Wait.
I do believe the reference to the horse trail was maybe in one of the biological documents.
Okay.
Or the archaeological report. It's too far south, really, to be a consideration for our project, I'd say.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. If there's no more discussion, I would take a motion on this to see where that goes.
Staff, could you put up the recommended motion?
There it is.
Okay, thank you. I'll go ahead and make a motion to adopt the mitigated negative declaration SCH 20250506060 pursuant to Public Resources Code Section 2100, how do you pronounce that? ETSEC? NCA Code of Regulations 1500, ETSEC. Approve sub 2020-00024 track map 2879 based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and conditions listed in Exhibit B.
Okay, we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Let's do a roll call, please.
Commissioner Avila? Commissioner Viacana?
Yes.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Avila?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
And Chair Shaw?
Yes. Okay, that was our last hearing item. I will entertain a motion to take all testimony into the record.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And then a motion to adjourn to our next regularly scheduled meeting, September 16th.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Yep. All right. Meeting adjourned. Thank you.